over $100,000 in part-time referral commissions last year. What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, because your 9 to 5 may make you a living, but your 5 to 9 makes you alive. Today, I'm joined by a longtime Side Hustle Show listener who reached out with a unique side hustle, what is essentially a part-time local lead generation website. Link Moser runs nhfinehomes.com, which features high-end luxury, like lakefront, waterfront, New Hampshire real estate. And so how it works in a nutshell is prospective buyers find the site, usually through Google or through SEO. And when they reach out for more information, Link can either work with them himself as a real estate agent, or what happens more often is, okay, I'm going to pass that lead along to one of my referral partners in exchange for a percentage of the agent's commission if and when that prospect eventually buys a house. Link, welcome to the Side Hustle Show.
Thanks, Nick. I'm excited to be here.
Me as well, because we're going to be looking at through this model, this local lead generation website model, through the lens of real estate, but really could be applied across a variety of niches, especially ones with high customer acquisition costs or where the value of a new customer is worth a lot. It's just a twist on the affiliate marketing model that we're probably all familiar with, except instead of sending people to Amazon for a 4% commission on a $30 to $50 product, we're sending people to real estate agents for a 0.05 to 0.07% commission on $1 million product, and it adds up to be quite a bit more. But you've been at this for a while at NH Fine Homes. If you were starting over, if you had to come up with an ancillary niche or something, like, you know, where do you get your gears turning, or what might make an appealing market to try and enter for somebody just starting out?
Looking at that through that lens, high dollar worth transactions where you can put the effort into to create some lead that has value. If it's not residential real estate, you could stay along those lines with commercial real estate, certainly high ticket transactions there. Business sales is another one that actually does not require licensure, as far as I know, in most locations. So, you know, there are organizations out there looking to buy businesses, and there are success fees that are easily six figures just for making a warm introduction of someone who you may know who may be looking to sell a business. And, you know, that's one I have not looked into yet, but it if I was starting over, that's a place I think I'd look to see, because there is there's a lot of capital on the sidelines looking for small businesses. And, you know, beyond that, I think, you know, you look in the consumer segment, I mean, you there aren't many transactions that are going to be much larger than business acquisitions or real estate. You could go downstream, and I think there are some elective healthcare things. And these are not things I know a lot about, but things like plastic surgery, I think certainly some things in the home service sectors, certainly some types of landscaping. Some of those projects can have pretty big dollar values. So I think I'd go where the money is.
Right. Roofing, you know, solar panel installs, kitchen remodels, like some higher ticket items. The business sales one is really interesting, because there have been niche brokerages that have popped up, some like in the Amazon FBA space specifically come to mind. But if you could build the resource, we just had Jono on a couple of weeks ago talking about his laundromat purchase. It's like, okay, could you build, you know, not just like the generic business brokerage website that consolidates all these listings, but like, oh, we're going to specialize in one little niche. I just want to snipe off this one segment and aggregate these, pull all these together. Like, if you want to buy a laundromat, we're your go-to source. And then you send off these referral leads to the eventual broker there. I think that's a really interesting one.
It is. I think it came up as you asked the question, but I think there's opportunity there for people, especially if someone has some familiarity with a particular niche or an interest in it within that segment. You know, the riches are in the niches, as they say, right?
Yeah, and it's somewhat data driven, and we'll talk about how you're pulling data from the MLS and not necessarily having to create a ton of unique, you know, topical content on, you know, whatever it is. But I, you know, it couldn't hurt to do that on the real estate side. Kind of like I think you alluded to, a license would be required, which may be seen as a hurdle to some, a barrier to entry, a competitive advantage to others. But can you speak to what that might look like if somebody wants to follow your footsteps and say, okay, I could create the niche, you know, real estate thing for, you know, something in my area?
So each state has some different variations in the rules. Today, the testing is still two tests, multiple choice. Certainly not the hardest test that any human has ever taken by any means. And most states have an education requirement, but it's a matter of, at least here in New Hampshire, 40 hours that you can do online now. And it's quite economical. For $500 or so, you can get the schooling done, take the test. And if you pass the first time, you've got a real estate license. So it's also a license that is pretty economical to hang on to. So again, here the costs are around $1,000 a year. So it lends itself very well to a side hustle or a part-time gig. And that's kind of how it's always been for me. I never considered myself a full-time real estate agent. And by having that license, it's allowed me, just as you said, to participate in referral fees as well as practice real estate. So you've got both those levers to pull on. If you have the time, you can practice traditional real estate with buyers or sellers. But where this came for me was sort of life got busy and some other interests I have as well as family. And, you know, you could take a lead, you could go out, and because it's a commission driven industry and the pay is all on the backside, you can have some wild goose chases. So as I got older, my time became a more valuable commodity. And I also learned that, you know, we know what we know, and there's certainly some areas where I get leads that I did not know. And so I was not the best person to go and take a prospective buyer to a lake that I didn't have knowledge of. So I started referring these out to other people who did have that knowledge. And when those occasionally a check would come in, you know, 6 months later, oh, hey, we sold the Smiths a house on the lake. You know, it was, wow, geez, all I had to do was send an email.
Yeah, that's
kind of where I think that's a better, you know, if you look at your hourly rate for just forwarding a lead, they may not all pan out, but you haven't lost the hours and the drive time that could happen if you were actually trying to work it.
Right. And what's interesting, a couple things, it sounds like this is a well-established practice in real estate. Like there's an understanding amongst both parties, like, hey, we're happy to pay for leads because it's kind of on a performance basis. If we don't close the deal, nobody's getting paid anyway. So it's like, you know.
Yeah, typically, can't price fix numbers, but 25% is pretty common in the industry for a referral fee. So if I send you a prospect, you close a piece of business, you agree on that number prior to doing that. But that's pretty typical, I think, what people do. Now, it can be above, it can be lower, but I think that's a good rule of thumb to work with.
Okay. And then the other thing that I wanted to call out was in the age of Zillow and Redfin and these like big aggregator sites that are trying to be everything to everyone real estate wise, saying like, no, there's still an opportunity for a smaller site to come in and carve out a little niche. And you've done this with New Hampshire lakefront, waterfront properties, which definitely got my gears turning. I'm like, well, we got some lakes near here. We got some, you know, vacation style home, maybe some like mountain second home cabin type of real estate. And it kind of like, oh, okay. You know, even though, yes, of course, this data is going to be on Zillow, it is going to be on Redfin, but it could also be here and be by being maybe more apparent, you know, more perceived, targeted, you know, maybe that attracts some people in the search results versus, you know, somebody looking for these, larger sites.
I think it does. And I think for me, I was able to optimize the content around very niche keywords. And in our case, there's a couple hundred lakes and ponds in New Hampshire. So creating landing pages specific to those water bodies and getting that granular and the long tail search where the big guys were not doing that or were not able to on that level. And I think the other aspect is you can improve your UI and the search mechanism, because you're right that the same property will show up across hundreds of sites. So you've got to build a better mousetrap by which maybe it's easier to search, or maybe there's some other features there. I mean, it's the same content, but people will use different websites based on the user interface alone. And if you can create a better user experience, for the longest time, Zillow did not have a way to search for waterfront homes. They do now, but I think it's still because they're doing it on a national level and real estate is so local. Our multiple listing service covers New Hampshire and Vermont. So there are location-specific fields that are not going to exist in Alabama or Utah, more than likely. And so especially around things like waterfront, which, again, may not be something in a more arid location. They may have other fields that we don't have. So if you are able to build a search interface using that, you know, an example is as well here is that we have, because it's in the New England and things get cold and freeze, we have seasonal properties as well as year round. So a seasonal property is, think of it as three season, typically does not have insulation or heat or people get running water out of the water body. So they may not have a well. So you don't have, you know, so if someone is looking to use it as a ski home and be there in January, they want specifically year-round homes. So that's another function that you can create a search around.
Okay, by being just a little bit more targeted, a little more niche down,
yep.
And showcase that local area expertise. You kind of, you know, can climb the ranks that way and attract some visitors and hopefully some buyer referrals in that sense. And specifically targeting, it sounds like, you know, second homes, luxury homes, like that may be the niche to play in. I mean, maybe like even a local subdivision, there might be an opportunity there if it's, you know, if it's super targeted and there's enough search volume around it. I just don't know if there would be enough volume, because I looked at like Snoqualmie Pass real estate, which is kind of like the local ski mountain for us, about 40 minutes east of here. According to Ahrefs, you know, a couple hundred people are searching for this a month. Like, is that enough to like start to think about building a site around?
I don't know. My initial thinking is it may not be, unless there is some additional long tail to build. Now, you know, I guess if you're coming up number one for that and you're capturing a lion's share of that type of volume, maybe the SEO is just going to get them to your front door. It's going to be your website that's going to have a sticky enough feature that's going to keep them there. These are very long sales cycles. And in this case, secondary homes are obviously discretionary, motion-driven purchases. Nobody needs a second home. And so I think there's a lot of browsing that happens in that. And we're all, you know, as a nation, you know, browsing real estate as a pastime for many.
Yeah, a lot of window shopping.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, I'm certainly doing that myself. And so I think the SEO will get them there, but you've got to have some other stickiness to keep them there. And again, I think that comes down to content, which is king in so many niches, is that if you think that there is enough content there and no one else has done that, then that may be a play. But then where do you go from there, right? I mean, if you were to, we have a dozen ski mountains and areas, and because real estate, now here's the neat thing, you can be licensed in one particular state, but you can participate and share referral fees across state lines without having a license in a different state. However, you may not be able to get the listing data in a market that you are not licensed. So for me to build a site around New England ski mountains, I can get everything from New Hampshire, but unless I have a license in Vermont and Maine, and that, which is not, you know, an insurmountable task. It's just, you know, the paperwork of it all, and just doing, there's some data fees that come with that. But I guess the point is, you could build a niche outside of where you live. I mean, it is not impossible.
Yeah. Is there an opportunity to be a you know, background or silent partner to an agent who already has a presence there, or even or already is like somewhat localized, just to say like I don't want to jump through the hoops of, you know, doing this education and taking this test, but I do like this idea, and if I could somehow, you know, do it in an above board way without doing the licensing requirement, maybe, you know, underneath somebody else, like I'm an intern or I don't know how you'd set it up.
You'd probably need the license in order, because you can't get a referral fee if you're unlicensed.
Okay.
So you probably should have the license that this gets you in the club, so to speak. But if you don't have any interest in going out in the field, get your license locally and then build that lead capture website with a partner in a market that you're in. And I can't imagine some real estate agent wouldn't say, hey, I'd be totally open to, you know, here's our arrangement. If you are the one investing in generating the leads and all I've got to do is work and close these and share it comes to you, that's a win-win for them. You know, basically build a website maybe in their name, but you own it and control the property. That way, if it didn't work out with that person, you could just rotate it into another partner in that area.
Yeah, that's similar to the Rank and Rent episode that we did, where it was kind of like, we're going to make a generic sounding NorthDallasCarpetCleaning.com or something, you know, whatever it is. And just we're kind of agnostic of who those leads go to. You know, ideally we have, you know, one primary referral partner who is, you know, paying us monthly to maintain the site and send them the referral business. But, you know, if for whatever reason they start to have crappy customer service, they go out of business, they get, you know, okay, we get to swap out for the next guy on the list. And it sounds like similar here. And that was a keyword difficulty of one for Snoqualmie Pass Real Estate. So it's like, oh, shoot, you know, worst case, you know, you spin up this website, you know, it doesn't sound like it'd be tremendously difficult to rank for that. The other one that came up was Suncadia, which is kind of this resort community east of the mountains. So it's like, you know, dry, you know, better weather, you know, it's kind of in the Cascade rain shadow. And so that had 800 search volume and traffic potential was a lot higher. It was 3,400 visits a month. And so that started to get a little bit more interesting, slightly more difficult, but still like in the green, according to Ahrefs.
You know, it doesn't take too many. If the dollar values and the average sales prices are up there. Last year, I sent a lead to a real estate agent who closed a $7.2 million lake home here in New Hampshire. And his commission check was a nominal commission check. And I believe I negotiated 30% of that. And so that was, I don't remember exactly, but it was over $50,000 for a referral check.
For one lead.
And I've since sent additional leads, because once you find someone that, you know, can close and makes good on, you know, the referral, you know, you're more than happy to feed that person whatever leads you get.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, that doesn't happen every day, but boy, you know, it more than makes up for, you know, your efforts to build that and maintain it. And if you're relying on organic traffic, your costs aren't that high. So, there'll be some up front, but, you know, to your point, in a small niche like that, if the price values are up there, which I'm guessing they probably are, it wouldn't take, you know, one or two a year. Certainly makes for a good little, chunk of change.
Yeah, no kidding. Kind of definitely gets excited about putting in the upfront work to, you know, form these relationships and, you know, go through all these hoops, you know, for that carrot at the end, the reward at the end. More with Link in just a moment, including setting up your referral relationships, tracking leads and deals through the pipeline, and his SEO strategy that gets traffic in the first place. But first, I want to share a tool that can save you time, money, and headache in your business. And that's our sponsor, FreshBooks. If you've ever been staring at a tax form wondering what numbers should go in which columns, or you've struggled to figure out an overly complex accounting software, and I'm raising my hand as being guilty of both of those, this is for you. FreshBooks is the easy-to-use accounting and invoicing software that makes it simple to send invoices and get paid fast. Plus, it keeps your income and expenses organized so you don't have to be begging your accountant for help the day before your taxes are due. No accounting class is necessary, and FreshBooks' award-winning support team is standing by to help out if you ever have any questions. Inside, you'll find everything you need to manage your books, like invoicing, expense and time tracking, automated payments, and reports that give you a real-time snapshot of the health of your business. FreshBooks users save up to 11 hours a week by streamlining these tasks, which means more time to move your business forward. I want to invite Side Hustle Show listeners to take advantage of a special offer at freshbooks.com/sidehustle. There, you'll get 90% off your FreshBooks subscription for 4 months. That's freshbooks.com/sidehustle. And big thanks to FreshBooks for sponsoring the show. Is it common, this is kind of like chicken versus the egg thing, to negotiate these referral deals? Like, do you have somebody in mind? Well, who, if I don't want to do this myself, like if I don't want to be actively practicing real estate, or, you know, if we're going down the business brokerage route or the, you know, roofing leads route, like, does it make sense to have that ultimate referral partner in mind and kind of pre-negotiate your deal structure with them first?
I think it does. Yes. I mean, I think, you know, that when you've got a lead there, it's dying on the vine and getting cold the moment it hits your inbox. So that's not the best time to be going and trying to find someone to, you know, place that with. And that, you know, we've, I'm sure, lost some over the years by trying to find a home for them. So I think having those conversations in place, talking to people about what you're looking to do, recognizing that you may not have a lead for them for 6 to 12 months, but staying in touch, you know, doing your homework. And I think the biggest thing is finding someone who is, has the integrity. I mean, it's common to have a written agreement that supports this, and most real estate agents work under a broker. So it might be a good idea to at least have a conversation with that supervising broker as well, just to keep things on the up and up, so that not from an integrity standpoint, but just because they're the ones who ultimately write the check. So I had a situation where a broker knew me and knew that I had referred some business to one of his agents. And he said, you know, I don't think this person ever paid you a referral fee. And I'd referred it out, and you know, I didn't have the best system for keeping track of that at the time, and I had forgotten about it. And so he mentioned the name of the client, and I luckily did have a good CRM. So I went back and I could find the email thread, and I said, yep, that came from us. So this guy went ahead and paid that referral out of his, you know, company dollar. Very above board guy, high integrity. I wish I could say that was the norm, but I don't know that it is for him. That was, you know, a year or so later. So he could have never mentioned that, and I probably would have never thought about it. And that was $12,000 or $15,000. So I think it wasn't an insignificant amount. So
once you hand it off, though, like, you know, it's very much this honor system.
It is the honor system. Yeah.
Did that deal ever close? Do you have a system to say, like, 3 months later, 6 months later, 12 months later, I'm following up to see, like, what the status is?
I have relied on the honor system, and I'm sure I've given away some money. So I'm embarrassed to sort of say I don't have a system for that. I do feel that if somebody has paid out a referral, you know, don't bite the hand that feeds you. So once somebody has proven that they will pay out and a referral, anything in that area is going that direction for now. So that's, they're going to buy my loyalty that way. Doesn't mean that holds the case forever, but it's going to depend on the volume. If you've got a lot of leads flowing around, it's harder to track all of that. I suppose I could take the name of the person I referred and try to go and track that down somewhere, or ask the broker. But at the end of the day, time is money, I guess. So I'm just kind of going on that recommendation. And I think it's going to come down to really building the relationship, the human relationship with that partner. Does that person have experience? Are they in it full time? You know, reading the reviews online, talking to their broker, getting a just your gut sense of, is this person a person of integrity? And I think you recognize there'll be some slippage. You may lose some, or somebody may. What happens if that lead converts 2 or 3 years later? Does that still count? I would say yes, but
we have a statute of limitations on
Yeah, no, there shouldn't be, but some agents, you know, but what happens if that person then decides they want a bigger house and sells it a year later? Well, that was still your lead, but at that point, do you get something? Do you get nothing?
Yeah, lifetime arrangement. And you see that in affiliate programs too, where it's like 30-day cookie, 60-day cookie, something like that.
Correct. You get a second bite of the apple at a discounted rate. I mean, that's the stuff you should all come to terms with. And it's not hard to do. It's just have it in writing. Make sure the supervising broker or office manager is in the loop, because that person can be another level of integrity and another set of eyes to see, oh, hey, this transaction passed through. Did this one come from Link? Oh, yeah, it did. Well, we've got to get them referred. I mean,
yeah. And you still have the customer's information, because they reached out to you first. So you could always follow up on that end to be like, hey, did you end up finding that house you were looking for?
And that customer information, that for me, that can be a proof of, you know, initial contact. Yes. Yeah, here's an email thread from last week with me and Mr. Smith showing that we had a quick conversation before I passed them over to Nick. There's certainly ways in a good CRM system. You can try to create a CRM system where that referral partner logs in and somehow maybe has some of the conversation there, or communicates within your referral interface if you wanted to. You know, that may get a little technical, but another solution is if you are part of a large brokerage, you may refer that to someone else within your company, especially if they're in your market. And now you're both under the same roof. So that makes it a little easier to see internal data around transactions, and certainly to be able to lean on the supervising broker.
All right. Well, you've got me excited about this model, because traditionally, you know, website based businesses, you know, whether you're selling affiliate products or you're relying on ad revenue, it's very much a volume game. How do I get more traffic? And it sometimes, you know, would take a ton of traffic to make that happen. And, you know, one of the examples that comes to mind was Saw L, who was running this insurance-based website. And he was making, in my mind, what seemed like a ton of money for not a lot of traffic because of the high value of insurance, of, you know, referral leads. But it was like an insanely competitive niche. And so when I look at some of the, you know, keyword difficulty metrics for some of these primary keywords, that's where it's like, oh, okay, doesn't, you know, not super competitive, doesn't take a lot of traffic because it's, you know, such high dollar amount where it's like, okay, this could be interesting, even if only 100 people stop by every month. But if they're super targeted, then it still makes a lot of sense. Talk to me about the SEO process here of, you know, what kind of content that you're putting on the site, how you're pulling in the different data, like how, you know, how are you competing against the Redfins and Zillows of the world?
My strategy was to build this thing custom because I thought there's a lot of SaaS models out there. And my feeling was that they all shared the same code base. They all shared more or less the same URL structure. And so that there was going to be similarities with that. So, you know, I built something custom and, you know, would invest my time in it. And as far as the SEO, it was a lot of on-page SEO. So really looking at, because your content primarily is your listing data, which is content that is in other places of the internet. So you had to leverage the data that was there to create your best to create some unique keywords and to just get that on-page experience as dialed in as you can. And of course, you know, those metrics are always changing. Last year, I invested some in link building to build that. And I actually would use Ahrefs to go and mine keyword data of other competitors to see if there's keywords that I don't have landing pages for and build those landing pages. And, you know, that the strategy works fine. And it didn't take a ton of content, certainly not anything what we would call long form content. So, you know, people want to see houses. They don't want to read, you know, my blurb on a particular lake. So, you know, demographical data I would add in there, you know, maybe some links to outbound links to local attractions or things, because again, if this was for vacation home buyers, they weren't as interested in, you know, schools or other things that a primary home buyer would be. This was more about, you know, how close am I to restaurants, or how large is this water body? How deep is it? Do they allow power boats? Those are the questions that would come up typically.
In some of these category specific pages are like this, you know, this specific lake home is like, it's only a couple hundred words of content, if that, at the top. And it's that kind of stuff that you describe, like, you know, a little bit about the area, you know, population, lake, you know, rules, nearby attractions. It's not, you know, 3,000 words of, you know, the Wikipedia entry about this lake.
I would have these landing pages for lakes and ponds or water body landing pages. And then I would have internal links back to town and city pages. So every lake would be in one or more towns. And so you were, you know, thinking through the mind of someone who's not local to this area. They're coming here. They want to know, where is this water body in relation to wherever they're coming from? And in our case, a lot of it is from Massachusetts, the greater Boston region, even Connecticut, New York. You know, how far is it from home? And again, how big is this lake compared to other lakes? And are there, what's there to do on there? Are there places where I can dock up and go get lunch? And most of our lakes are small where that doesn't happen. But, you know, is there enough room to go boating, you know, water skiing? So these are the questions that came up that you would want to include on those landing pages to answer those questions.
What worked for you on the proactive link building front?
So I hired a third party company because link building is crazy and tedious. And I hired a company that did this on a flat fee per link basis based on the domain rating. So these guys did a great job, and I would build landing pages and we would create some content and then they would link to that. You know, certainly I leveraged a blog as well. So there was times to perhaps write some longer form content and then link back to some of the pages. So that almost became sort of like pillar content in that case. But, it, you know, 6-7 months, we started to build organic traffic. And what I learned from that was I was building traffic for lower value keywords. So I was getting the traffic and I was getting some leads, but these leads were like, you know, cabin in the woods, which there wasn't a lot of inventory for it, but these were people that were searching for, you know, lower price point homes. A good agent is going to take any referrals that you're going to send them, large or small, because they're thinking, again, looking long-term at that relationship. And you just never know where a lower price point may have a friend that has a higher price. I mean, you just never know. So a good agent should be looking at the relationships they're building and treating all leads equal. But the reality is that's not always the case, because you're asking them to share part of that commission back as a referral. So it's just less pie to go around. So I was finding that I was getting some of these and they were more further off and harder to place. So it was an outcome I hadn't expected, because sometimes we get, at least I got focused on, wow, yippee, I'm getting more backlinks. My traffic is growing. I'm, you know, 50% year over year, but the type of traffic I'm getting and the keywords that I was ranking for were skewing away from the larger lakes, the more luxury, higher price point keywords. So there was almost a little bit of sacrifice going on, I think, there. And to the point where I actually reverted back to the previous version of the website, which had been generating more likes. Now, it's tough because market changes and conditions and things, you really never quite know if it's you or if it's the market or what's going on. And of course, your competitors are, you know, there are going to be some out there.
Yeah, they're not standing still either.
They're not standing still. And
do you ever play around with paid traffic at all, or all organic?
All organic. I know that paid can work, and there are models and people that do that, but I just never went there. I think you've got to have, when you're going to go play with paid, you've got to have your landing pages dialed in and your offers, and you know, you need to have a good mousetrap. I think paid may work better when you are converting those leads and working that entire transaction, because you're getting more of the pie then.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody wants to buy a $7 million home, I might, you know, pay a few bucks to Google to get in front of that lead.
I would, but those people are far and few between, and in most markets, maybe Southern California, but and it's very hard to predict. I mean, it's very hard to, you know, not like e-commerce where you can track that sale right through the checkout.
Yeah.
You know, the lead times can be long, and so I don't know if PPC works that well, and it's certainly diminishing returns too, because, you know, the Zillows and Redfins of the world are using PPC, and
yeah,
and I just, you know, I think it's a race to the bottom for little guys.
Are there any tools or technology that you swear by, either, you know, website platform or to pull in the listing data, that either, you know, starting over, that I would use today, because the site's been around for a while? You mentioned, hey, it's custom, but just curious if there are, if somebody is looking to start this today, if there were a handful of tools in your tool belt that would come in handy.
I'm a big fan of WordPress, like so many, for the platform. And I used an IDX plugin called Showcase IDX. Looked around at several others, and you could build this stuff. You could hire somebody, a freelancer, to build it all for you. But I'd gone that the first route, and it was expensive, and there were holes in it. So I think if you can find a better mousetrap, Showcase IDX, I think, charges either $60 or $100 a month, and they have all that data there for you. And then another nice thing with that is, if you were to expand in other markets, if they already have a footprint there, it's pretty easy to roll in. You know, if you happen to be on the border of one state and need to be in two markets, that's another option. So I found their interface aesthetically worked well. I found that it, and this is certainly not a plug to them any means, but you know, it was easy to work with, and I could build landing pages, because again, most of us aren't super technical. So I knew WordPress, and I wanted to be able to create landing pages pretty easily. So it worked well for that.
Okay. And then that also helps the listings come down if they get sold, if they're inactive, right? Because that's like,
yep, that's all automatic. They take care of all that through the plugin. And you know, the thing that I liked about that one is that all that listing data lived on your domain name too. So sometimes there's solutions out there where all that, essentially most of your content, will be sitting on a third-party URL, which doesn't give you any SEO value. So that really cut the pool down quite a bit, because you needed to have that data living on your domain so it could get indexed.
And so typical, you know, conversion flow or visitor flow would be, somebody looks for homes on such and such lake, or, you know, such and such lake real estate, And they find your page, they scroll through the listings, say, hey, this one looks interesting. I think you got all the pictures that have been pulled in through this feed. And then they hit the contact button, they call you. What's a typical, you know, win from, you know, cold visitor to warm lead?
Capturing the organic lead, I think, is challenge number one. I had tried in the earlier years with some forced registration. So, you know, you could browse the website for free. After so many views, you had to put your name and email address in. And that was, you know, that was 10 years ago. And at the time, that was not an uncommon practice. But I think now, you know, the internet has changed where I was more of the belief, as I think others are, just make that data available. The plugin did allow for that functionality. It also allowed that you could hold back some premium content, some demographical data, because you're trying to take that raw traffic and convert that to a identifiable lead. And if you were really aggressive, you could then call or email that person. But most people don't want to hear from us that early on in their search. So if you're able to get a lead, I just let it organically go. You know, a real good warm lead is when somebody filled out a form and says, hey, I'd like to see 123 Main Street, you know, this Saturday. You know, so we call that a showing request. So that was someone that was raising their hand, wanted to see a specific property in real life that was further along in the buy cycle. So at that point, you had that decision to make of, did you want to follow up and work that lead yourself, or just pass that lead right on to a referral partner and let them run with it?
And that's usually through the contact form or on every you know, product detail page. There's a, you know, click here to contact us or something.
Correct.
Okay. No, that makes sense. I was going to ask if there's any broader email capture website. The money is in the list. Everybody's like, yeah, you got to grow your email list. Is there like the, you know, lead magnet of, you know, the seven deadly sins to avoid when buying a lakefront home? Or like, is there like a higher, you know, top of the funnel lead magnet for site visitors?
There could be. And I haven't taken it that far yet. But certainly you could create lead capture, you know, behind a funnel or something of that nature. You know, top 10 tips for buying waterfront in New Hampshire. You know, certainly could. And, you know, one thing I haven't tried is retargeting. I mean, because this is a long sales cycle and you're getting, you know, a lot of traffic just from looking, you can certainly, that's a form of paid traffic or paid ads that I think might have some merit, especially if you had some sort of offer like that. I think those are great ideas. I just haven't tried that yet.
Yeah. What would be a compelling offer for somebody? I mean, we've seen the sign that must be purely designed to get people to take a picture and share it on social media. It's like free pizza when you buy a house. And you're like, I don't feel like these are necessarily in alignment. Like, this thing costs $10 versus this, you know, $500,000 purchase. It is just, but you notice it and you talk about it. And you share. So like, you know, trying to think, well, what would be that compelling offer that people would talk about and share? But I just was curious about that, you know, top of the funnel email capture. I like this retargeting idea because, yeah, long sales cycle. Okay, just getting back in front of people who may still be in the market, especially as, you know, seasonality changes. I imagine, you know, there's a lot of seasonality. Oh, I'm not really looking for vacation homes in the middle of winter, or just as market conditions change too. And we kind of alluded to that. Well, you know, the market is not what it was in 2020 and 2021. So it's, you know, kind of, you know, almost setting yourself up now, trying to build the foundations for when real estate rebounds.
Yes. Yep.
So heading into the new year, what's next for you? Any big projects, initiatives, plans that's got you excited?
I have been focused more so in marketing and, you know, kind of pivoting to my other side at Hustle, or kind of the more main focus lately has been around digital marketing and consulting. So I'm looking at trying to move upstream in that to position myself kind of as a consultant. You know, it's an interesting time to see where, you know, the economy's headed and what the future's bringing. And I think I try to be the optimist, right? That there's always opportunity out there. It's just trying to read the tea leaves a little where that is. And you know, just in talking today, you know, it brings me back to that idea of the business acquisition aspect of it. I've done a little bit of M&A with some small client rosters from other web companies that retire, and when you get out and you meet people and you talk to people, you find opportunities where, hey, maybe I'm I can play matchmaker here. And it's the same thing in real estate. You know, you've got someone that wants to buy something and somebody wants to sell something, and there's an opportunity in the middle there. So that's something that I need to put on the to-do list to explore a little more here between now and the first of the year when there's some downtime.
Absolutely. No, that's, you definitely got my gears turning on different niches, different areas where the same general model could be applied to. You know, who is actively looking to grow their business and they're hungry and they're aggressive and they're paying for leads, and how do you kind of help them achieve that goal? And, you know, by creating these websites with super low competition in a lot of cases, to go out and establish that credibility and authority and get that done, which you've done an awesome job of at nhfinehomes.com. You can check the link out over there. Let's wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Don't look at failure as a bad word. I think that's part of the growth. I don't know if I learned that early enough in life, because I look back at, you know, fearing taking chances on things and you know, as holding me back. So I think jump in the pool. You know, if you don't have a side hustle, you're at the perfect time of year to start thinking about that with a new year coming up. Get that list of New Year's resolutions out. Get your ducks in a row over the holidays and, you know, hit January 1st running. You know, I don't know where the future will take all of us, but I think it's life's a contact sport, and it's far better on the field than it is from the sidelines.
It has more fun when you get in the game. I'm with you on that front. Just a couple of things. I took a ton of notes during this call, but like targeting these higher end homes, if you're going to go the real estate route, targeting these higher ticket services or other, you know, just, you know, where there's a lot of money, a small percentage can be a significant side hustle income. So it makes a lot of sense doing that keyword research up front, trying to see, well, where is there enough volume and low enough competition where it makes sense to go through the effort to build up that site, try and establish some credibility and authority. If you like this style, I've got a couple episode recommendations for you in the archives. One that just came to mind was John Doherty, who runs Credo. I think it was Get Credo, an SEO referral service. John was kind of doing SEO consulting as a side hustle, ended up, you know, having to turn away leads, and thought, well, you know, wait a minute, there's lots of other friends that I trust in this industry. Would they be willing to pay me for a qualified referral? Sure enough, they would be. And so he built up this kind of referral network. We called it high touch affiliate marketing in that episode. That's 273. If you scroll back in the archives, hopefully the archives go back far enough, you'll be able to find that one. 273. That's a good conversation. And then we kind of mentioned the rank and rent model. This was Luke Vanderveer in episode 448. Really interesting model where he built up this whole portfolio of, you know, highly localized sites targeting very local services and, you know, basically charging companies rent for them. You know, these companies that were trying to grow their business, they were established, they were reputable, but looking for incremental business. And hey, I'm happy to help you get that set up and charge a monthly fee for that. Sometimes, you know, $500, $1,000 a month. You could see how it doesn't take too many in the portfolio to start to build a pretty significant side hustle income on that. So again, Link, really appreciate you stopping by. Thanks for sharing your insight. Thanks to FreshBooks for sponsoring this week. You can get your bookkeeping out of the shoebox and into the cloud with the help of the number one invoicing and accounting solution for freelancers and service providers everywhere. Just hit up freshbooks.com/sidehustle to get 90% off your FreshBooks subscription for the first 4 months. That is it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're finding value in the show, the greatest compliment is to share it with a friend. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen, and I'll catch you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.